Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Just to give you the breaking news, the Board of Estimates just announced in the last half an hour that they unanimously approved the settlement in the Freddie Gray case. And we will talk about that with our two guests. We are joined here in studio by A. Dwight Pettit. Dwight Pettit, of course, one of our leading defense attorneys who's representing clients and lawsuits against police misconduct cases and much more for the last 40 years. I don't know how many years. It's been a long time. Good to have you back, Dwight.
Glad to be here. Good to see you, Mark.
And the Reverend Dr. Eber Brown, pastor of the Pleasant Hill Baptist Church, executive director of Orita's Crossing Freedom School, who's been in the middle of all the Freddie Gray demonstrations and conversations and struggle in the city. Good to have you back in the studio.
Thanks so much, Mark.
410-319-8888 is the number here. Join us with your thoughts on this settlement and what this portends. Write to us at talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, but do call in. Want to hear your thoughts at 410-319-8888. So this is a – why do you think, both as an attorney and as an observer of politics and life in this city, Dwight, and been here your life, why the settlement was so high? Given that the other settlements that have taken place that had these caps that were lower, what do you think happened here?
Well, I think the political notoriety in this particular case sort of forced the city's hand to do the right thing, to get on the right side, to get on the side of its constituents. So I think in what they did was a political move, which was a good move. Don't get me wrong, for the Gray family, but it was a good political move for the city to, in fact, show some admission, to show some contrition, to in fact separate itself to a certain extent with its own police department, in a way to say, we know we're wrong, let's, in a very, very political heated time where the world is watching, the nation is watching, and remember that an election is watching. So this was a slick political move that I'm glad that the city was somewhat enlightened and took the position that it took.
Well, let me pick up on one thing that you just said, Dwight. And Haber, let me ask you to jump at this first, unless you have something you want to get into early, which is fine. When you just said the separation from it's separating itself from the police department is what you – the word you just used, Dwight. And the message from the police department today was, of course – the police union, I should say, and be clear. The police union was that they were very upset about the potential of this happening, that it was unjust to happen before the case was adjudicated. But what they also said was that it doesn't help the relationship between Baltimore City and the city police department. Now, when I read that, and maybe I'm making too much of this, but it immediately made me think we had two absolutely separate entities that had nothing to do with each other.
Well, that's what I'm – go ahead, Reverend, but that's what I meant in terms of moving away from the police department.
Yeah, I mean, and it's interesting.
Language is important in these things.
It's very important, and I think it's very telling as well. It's almost as if the police union is its own – separate nation having negotiations with a foreign nation called Baltimore. You know what I mean? So it will read like that. Or it can read like that, and especially the things going on the ground. People have been feeling that way anyway for a very long time as it relates to the police department. But I just wanted everybody to be completely clear. As Mr. Pettit said, that the city did the right thing in this, and did the right thing by way of the Gray family. To be clear, that the settlement doesn't settle the larger systemic issues that yet require our attention, our energy. This is another piece of evidence of the system of accountability and transparency and police department not working, right? So while this might work for the Gray family, it does not work in the larger scheme of things for how justice, how accountability, and how transparency need to be meted out in the city.
But I wonder about the kind of mindset that looks at this. I think the Sun, the title of the Sun's editorial, Baltimore Sun's editorial this morning was Riot Insurance. That the subtext was here, subtitle was the city's civil settlement with the Gray family may lessen the risk of unrest as criminal proceedings against police officers continue. But what about the long-term cost? What about this notion of this idea?
Well, I think, you know, that's a correct assessment. That is, it is done with a sort of hope of having it as a calming effect in case some of Judge Williams' rulings are not acceptable to the electorate or to the constituents of the city. And I think the Reverend is exactly right. We're dealing with systemic problems, and this settlement doesn't address that at all. But what the city is saying is that, hey, if something doesn't develop the way that the citizenry wants it to develop in the criminal prosecution, we can say, hey, we understood, we got on the right side, we did the right thing in terms of the city. Give us a break. You know, everybody calm down.
And I think it's almost like the climax of other actions that the city and the business community has been taking since April. So when the mayor, you know, announces her snow shoveling program for youth and block parties all over the city, and oh, by the way, Prince is coming, and you know, hospitals now want to hire thousands of people, right? All these things, you see a lot of money is moving around different programs as well. But these things, I think, have been attempts to, invite a calming effect, as Mr. Pettit says, and then, you know, also to get people's eye off the ball, which is, you know, my main assignment this morning, Mark, is let people know that the work must continue. Yes, there's an election coming up, and no matter how much money the Gray family received in the settlement, we still need to, as an electorate, really vet candidates, really, you know, hold their feet to the fire in terms of this issue, because at the end of the day, it's taxpayers who are paying the settlement and all the other settlements before. Taxpayers are putting the money up for inefficiencies and deficiencies in the system as it relates to policing and law enforcement.
So the settlement of $6.4 million, more than the combined total of, I think, $5.9 million has been given out by the city over the last couple of years for police brutality and misconduct. Does this set a precedent in terms of just legally and for the city to have to, in terms of the police department's behavior and what they may have to pay out in the future?
Well, there have been large settlements beyond the limitations of the cap historically. There have been maybe two or three. So the city has deviated when it decided it was politically in their interest to deviate. So it doesn't set a first-time precedent, but it might be setting a precedent that the city is going to, instead of sitting in guard of the gatehouse door as they have been and wrapping itself around the police department, regardless of fault and liability and culpability, the city might be signaling that it's going to try to be more fair and objective in its analysis of police brutality cases, which, in fact, if that is the case, would be a breakthrough. But if they're doing this just to placate the citizens and cooling things out, and they go back to their previous mental disposition in other cases which have yet to be filed or other cases coming up, then I think it's going to be disastrous on their part.
I'm curious, Mr. Pettit, do you think, and I don't mean to sit in your chair,
please,
Mark, but I'm just curious,
fine, brother, go ahead.
Do you think that with this settlement, does it change things as it relates to the upcoming General Assembly in January? Do you think that the Baltimore City delegation especially would push harder as it relates to getting something done around the Law Enforcement Officer's Bill of Rights and other accountability legislation down there?
I think in answer to your question, I think the Baltimore delegation is going to have more of an impetus, but I think the backlash from the settlement in the legislative bodies is going to be more prominent than we've seen before, because the conservative elements of the state are not going to buy into this amount of the settlement and the timeliness without a trial. A lot of people have argued, well, this case, you had caps and so forth, and Billy was going to take it in the federal court. There's no doubt about that under 42 U.S.C. 1983, the under color of law statute. But
What is that?
That is the civil rights statute, and this is a civil rights violation that the policy and procedures of the Baltimore City Police Department led to this unconstitutional action of depriving Freddie Gray of his constitutional rights. But when the city argues, or the Sun argues, that it was a greater threat of exposure to financial damages, I don't buy into that. what people have to realize, the conservative, I mean, the federal tribunal might be our only area to go because of the caps, but the federal process is much more conservative because the jurors and so forth come from around the state, come from the Eastern Shore, Western Maryland, Anne Arundel County, and some, you have a sprinkling of Baltimore City. So you don't get any progressive relief by going into the federal courts, but you get constitutional relief if you can, in fact, get to a verdict.
That's fascinating. I think that's in some ways. And folks, do join us here, 410-319-8888. As we talk about the next steps here, tomorrow there will be the court will decide whether or not the venue will change. That's a huge the biggest decision, I think, in all this is the change of venue that will be decided tomorrow by Judge Williams and where this may take us. 410-319-8888. We'll be following this all very closely here on The Steiner Show in the coming days. But so when you look at that, I mean, a couple things hit me as I was listening to two of you. And one, when you were describing the federal case and describing what's happening with the police department, is that it just really does show in many ways, the deep divide we have in our culture around police and around policing and race. And also this thing that we've had, I always like to say, since the 1950s with Dragnet, the TV show that was on in the 50s was the cops from Colorado Highway Patrol and those things out there, that we've had this love affair with the idea of policing. And the kind of contradictions are coming to the fore with Frederick Gray and Moore, you know, which makes it difficult to play it out in the federal courts, as you were saying, which I think is an interesting kind of way to kind of look at this.
What the public doesn't understand, and basically people who would be jurors in Baltimore City, when you start talking about a change of venue, which I think would be horribly wrong and violation of law, you don't have to have a change of venue. The voir dire will cure all of that, and I've explained that, Mark, on
your
show.
Yes, you have.
But the main thing is that jurors, what Baltimore City people, I mean, what the nation has to realize, people need to realize, jurors, whether they be in Baltimore City or outside of Baltimore City, are very conservative when it comes to the police. People want to support and believe the police. I've had enough cases which should have been slam dunks with people shot in the back, murdered, killed, unarmed. Just a case that just was up here in East Baltimore, Northeast Baltimore, where the young man was shot and killed in the shopping center. They had just searched him, knew he didn't have a gun. He ran a police officer, shot him twice in the back, killed him. The officer was acquitted. And so to say that you can't get a fair jury in Baltimore City, or that the jury will not be fair and non-prejudiced, is an absurdity, because you would find, if you looked at the records, you looked at the trials, both criminal and civil, that Baltimore City jurors are just as conservative as any other jurors when it comes to police actions.
Wow.
And I think that historically has been proven true. And I think that well, I'm going to come back to that and kind of examine what that means for the community and why that is. Because you're really pondering that. I can see here what that means.
Yeah.
But I think that despite this judgment today to rule the $6.4 million to give to Frederick Gray's family over 2 years in two different parts, that if the venue was changed tomorrow, in the hearts and minds of the citizens of Baltimore who do care about this case and have been out there in the community, this will not make a hell of a difference. What am I trying to say?
I don't think it makes a difference whether it stays in Baltimore or whether it goes out of Baltimore. The criminal prosecution.
What I mean for the people in the city, that will be like a flashpoint.
Oh yeah, it would be a slap in the face to the people of the city.
That's what I'm saying.
It would insult the intelligence of the people of the city that they can't be fair, reasonable, and unbiased, and listen to the facts and make a decision.
The timing is curious, though. You know that.
Yes, it is.
You know, this coming up right before this very important hearing, and so I think it goes back to what you were saying, Mr. Pettit, about the, you know, the trade winds around elections are blowing, and so people are a little bit more sensitive, and so. I would not be too surprised if the decision was to move it.
Really?
I wouldn't be too surprised. I'd be disappointed but not surprised to have this come out, you know, so soon and right before this hearing. It seems like, you know, they're arranging, putting the stars, lining them up in a certain way, as you were saying earlier, to placate the folks and calm us down and say, okay, well, so at the end we'd be able to say, well, at least they got their money. At least they got that 6 point whatever money. You know what I mean? And so, but still, that it demands that people in Baltimore especially, who have been working on these issues, remain vigilant and continue educating people about the legislative process, sitting at the feet of people like Mr. Pettit to learn more about the judicial process and how all of this is connected together. And then you talked about Baltimore. You're not thinking, Mr. Pettit, about whether it's Baltimore or Howard County or wherever, you know, juries tend to be more conservative. It makes me wonder about the jury pool, the available pool of people who, you know, are called to jury duty like me or whoever else. And is that it makes me wonder about how do we make sure that the pool is balanced enough. So if there's already this conservative element within the current jury pool, how can we balance it out so that you have people who might look at it a little bit differently?
Well, basically, the pool is taken from the voters' registration rolls, right, and Motor Vehicle Administration. And so the pool is not necessarily reflective of the population balance. In fact, it's just the opposite.
Right.
You will find that the pool that the Freddie Gray jury will be picked from will probably be 55-45 or almost 50-50. Sometimes it's surprising when you walk in and you see the jury pools in Baltimore City because you have a predisposition of thinking it is going to be heavily minority or heavily right. African-American, and it's not. Because of the composition of how the jurors are selected. A lot of us don't drive. A lot of us don't vote. And so, therefore, it doesn't reflect the population base. So you start off with a pool that is very, very balanced, and then you add to that the built-in prejudice toward the police to, in fact, protect the police. And that's why voir dire is so important, both ways, to try to come up with people who are going to actually be impartial and make the decision on the facts they hear in the courtroom.
Let's go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. Bill, line 3, you're on the air.
Yes, first let me just say hello.
Good morning.
Hello to everybody.
Hey, Bill.
I guess my question is this. First of all, I just want to say I agree with most of everything that's been said. But I guess my question is this. Is that I don't have no problem with the Gray family getting the money, but I would think that once this goes to court, the thing I just was saying is the favor of defense. Because if you already put money out, then the defense going to say, well, the city has already accused the police officers that are awarding the family this money.
Does it help the defense?
What you're talking about in the criminal prosecution?
Yeah.
Well, I think it always is by way of implication. I mean, in the trial, it's going to be argued very, very strongly that it's irrelevant to come in during the criminal proceeding, that one does not attach to the other. You're talking about different standards of proof. One is beyond a reasonable doubt. The other is preponderance of the evidence. But, yes, it's going to be in the minds of jurors that that people have been paid. To a certain extent, the family has been vindicated, the family has been rewarded. You can't take that, you know, you're not going to be able to take that out of the minds of the jurors. But that's any place you go. That sort of,
right.
That to me doesn't support removal.
Back to the phones, 410-319-8888. Owen, you're on the air.
I just wanted to add a quick comment on jury selection and change of venue.
Sure.
You know, I live in Baltimore now, but I lived in Oakland when the Oscar Gray trial was happening, and they changed the venue from Oakland, which is in Northern California, down to Southern California, suburban L.A., and, you know, people rioted when they changed the venue, when they convicted the officer of manslaughter and gave him 1 year for shooting Oscar Gray in the back while he was handcuffed, people rioted it again, and, you know, changing the venue to outside Baltimore City isn't going to be a fair jury either, because everybody was watching. And outside counties send police officers to occupy the city as well. And so the idea that it would be neutral outside the city is false. And the idea that people are going to be satisfied with anything other than full conviction on the depraved heart murder is also a really dangerous assumption. So I hope I'm glad the family got the money, but also equally sure that that's in no way sufficient.
Lieber.
Yeah, I think that Owen makes a great point about officers from other counties coming in and the National Guard. And so it's not like other places weren't connected to this. In addition to just watching on TV, there are very real connections to this all around the state of Maryland. But I'm still looking at judicial activism in the realm of voter registrations and motor vehicles, and looking at, I mean, I know groups like Out for Justice and others were down there in Annapolis' last session, raising their voices and advocating for people who are formerly incarcerated to regain the full right to vote and participate in this process. And while voter registration drives and the like wouldn't affect this case necessarily, this is a case in point where that type of activity is very important, far exactly. beyond voting day.
Exactly.
This is one of those instances where having a voter card in your wallet really makes a difference.
I mean, as you were saying that, Heber, I was wondering, when you do your the voir dire, when you question the jury pool before you put them in the box, can a lawyer, can a judge say, let's say a felon could vote, had the right to vote, or people did vote, can you say, been arrested in
felons,
prison?
Felony records automatically out.
You can't ask that. Can I ask that?
They're not going to be on the pool.
They won't even make it.
But right. if they were given the right to vote, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. If felons were given the right to vote, could they still be taken off, not allowed to be on a jury, because they could say, well, did you serve time? Yes, well, I don't want this person on the jury.
Yeah, because you have strikes for cause.
Right.
Which are when people express any type of prejudice and what have you. But then you have preemptory strikes. And preemptory strikes, as long as they're not based on race or gender, you can strike for whatever reason you want to. And that's another thing that folks have not realized here. By the judge separating the trials, the preemptory strikes are going to be much more limited had there been a joint trial. There'd been a joint trial, each defendant would have had, say, 10 strikes apiece and so forth. So other than just strikes for cause, there would have been a whole bunch of preemptory strikes. Now you're just going to have one defendant who's going to have the number of preemptory strikes which are, in fact, relevant to that particular charge. And so other than strikes for cause can go on forever. Preemptory strikes are going to be much more limited, which I think it's much easier to impanel a jury in Baltimore City, because you're going to, and that's why one of the reasons I think the state's attorney is saying, let's take it a trial by trial basis and let's see how the strikes and voir dire works, because that's going to cure the defects very quickly, and you're going to have many, many people that are going to be able to say, yes, I can make a fair and reasonable and unbiased decision based on the evidence I hear in the courtroom. It's done every day, and you're gonna easily qualify 12 or 16 people, whatever you need, to be jurors in Baltimore City.
So that's real quick, Mark. So there's a certain number of preemptory strikes.
Yes.
What's that number? Strikes for cause can go on forever.
Preemptory strikes are limited based on the charge that's involved, whether it's a murder charge or whether it's a felony charge or whether it's a misdemeanor charge.
Okay.
And so it goes from 4 to 10 to the highest charges of 20. And each defendant has those available preemptory strikes to work with. And those numbers are determined when the judge knows those numbers, the defense and the prosecution knows those numbers. And so they know what they have to work with before the whole ball game starts.
We have a couple of tweets here that Barry wrote in. If the Gray case is moved to another venue, I will be tempted to put my future summons for jury duty in the trash. If I'm incompetent to work in a jury, I'm incompetent to find a way to the courthouse for jury duty.
Good point.
Yeah.
And Clarence wrote in, what effect will this have on other deaths at the hands of police and reopening by civil action? Subterfuge, and more subterfuge. Here's what we need to do. Here's how we have to shape the narrative, and what will we tell them to support it? I think that we talked a bit about it earlier, how this will affect, how this might affect other civil actions in the future. But I wonder how you think that this will affect, Heber, the movement that's been built in the city, both this and the argument tomorrow, like if the venue is changed and this verdict, how do you think the various parts of this movement in the city will be affected by these decisions?
I think there will be disappointment. I think there'll be disappointment that this has moved out of the city. I think it would also have the effect of disconnecting a lot of people from it's that geographical, you know, that spatial location, it'd be disconnecting people from where the action is. And so in terms of demonstrations and the like, there's a whole lot of people, you know, who wouldn't be able to get, let's say it's in Montgomery County, Howard County, wherever. there's a whole lot of people you're cutting off from helping, from being a part of the process. I'm just speaking from an organizer, activist point of view. Having it in the middle of Baltimore bodes well for those who want to exercise their constitutional right to raise their voices and organize and demonstrate. And so if you move it away, there's going to be people who are concerned about that, and rightfully so. And it may, you know, help those who want to see this thing go away quietly, or kind of keep the energy down, keep the fire down, keep the heat down. As long as it's in Baltimore City, it's close enough for everyday people to engage in whatever way, whether it be demonstrations or just paying attention and following and educating their neighbors on their block. So I'm prayerful, though, that it stays. I mean, I think the whoever tweeted that first tweet you read, Mark, makes a great point. If I'm, you know, good enough to pay taxes here, I'm good enough to, you know, do so many other things in this city, put this case where it belongs in Baltimore City and let Baltimore decide.
And let me add one thing to that, Mark, which I made this point on your show before. The only county, in my opinion, which has the numbers similar to Baltimore City, the demographics, is Prince George's County. Mm-hmm. And so if the decision were made to remove it, which I agree with the Reverend, I strongly agree that it should stay in Baltimore. But if the decision some kind of way would be to move one or more of the trials outside of Baltimore City, the only place that you could get a sort of similar type of jury balance would be Prince George's County. Any place else in Maryland that this case would be taken to, in my opinion, would be an automatic victory for the officers. Case over. Case closed.
Very quick thought from the from a caller, last caller. Kenneth, welcome to the program. We literally only have like a less than a minute for your comment.
Yeah, I know you're running out of time. How you doing, Mark?
Very well.
Well, you know, we talked about this the other day, me, you, and I think Mr. Dwight Pettit. I talked to you on the phone, Mr. Pettit, but we don't go into that.
Okay,
I told you. See, what happened is they're going to try to move these trials to various cities because various cities and states have different laws. And I don't know what they all are, but by the time they get through pussyfooting around, that's a bad word, isn't it? messing around, that people are going to get tired of this whole situation. It's going to be worse than O.J. Simpson, and they're going to lose faith in the whole thing. And what's going to happen is, listen, they're going to use pretty soon. No, they're not going to be able to get a fair trial anywhere.
Okay, we are out of time, but let me just say that the laws are not different everywhere else, right? The laws are the same.
It's going to stay in the state of Maryland,
right?
And the laws are the same in the state of Maryland.
The laws are the same, but the difference will be the jury pool. Mm-hmm. If it is in a mostly white rural conservative areas,
right? You have, and all the other counties, the racial balance,
right? That's most of Maryland. What you just described.
Right. Exactly. That's most Eastern of Shore, Maryland. Western Maryland, Adirondack County,
and the feelings
anywhere
about,
except Prince George's, different ballgame.
And the feelings about race are very intense.
Right.
Yeah, I'm getting it on my Twitter and Facebook page and messages and stuff I've never seen before in my life through this stuff. So it's just, you're very right, Mark.
Well, we will continue looking at this in a very close way. We have to take a break here. We're going to take and come back. When we do, we'll be talking to Baltimore County Executive Kevin Kamenetz, who will be joining us for the hour to talk about issues in politics in Maryland and Baltimore County. I want to thank A. Dwight Pettit for joining us once again. Always brings his sharp legal mind to the studios. Thank you much. Great
always
to see you, Dwight.
Always good to be with you, Mark.
And my friend and colleague here, the Reverend Dr. Heber Brown. Heber, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks,
studio.
Mark.
Thank
appreciate
you.
It.
We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. It's time for Kevin Kamenetz and your thoughts and questions at 410-319-8888. For the Baltimore County Executive. Stay with us.